The Last Word with Matt Cooper on Today FM.
For television tonight, Jennifer Gannon and Gordon Hayden join us. And Jennifer, can you believe that Netflix would have paid Claire Foy less than Matt Smith for their parts in The Crown?
No, because it's not called like Prince Philip's big man-sized crown. It's called The Crown, and it's about the Queen. So, I mean, they're coming from it from an angle saying that, you know, Matt Smith was the more well-known when he signed on because he was Doctor Who. But I don't think he was that more well-known, especially because the Venn diagram between Doctor Who fans and fans of prestige, like period drama, I wouldn't say is quite, you
I
know,
actually
big.
Have to, I never saw him as Doctor Who. I don't watch Doctor Who. I love The Crown. I thought Claire Foy is magnificent in the first
two
series. She's
in every scene.
He's brilliant as well. But you're right, she's in more of it than him.
I think what they wanted to do is with the second season, Peter Morgan, the writer, said he wanted Prince Philip to be more of a character within it. So you can see it in the second season. All right, he is, you know, a main part of the story. But I think if you want to put it in Doctor Who terminology, it would probably be like when he was Doctor Who, asking Billy Piper to come back as Rose, the assistant, and paying her more than the man whose name is on the show. So that's what it's like.
I totally get why he was paid more. Yeah, and I completely understand it, because he comes with the bigger profile. And at the time, she is a complete unknown. So from an agent's perspective, she's the one who's hungry for the part. She'll take the cash where he'll want more. It's from an agent's perspective, okay. It totally makes sense.
Maybe for the first series, that might. Might.
But they always get them for two seasons, though.
What about
seasons,
the second
though?
Season? Because she had won the Golden Globe before the second season.
But the contract's already written by that stage, so it's tough shizing.
I think what the third season, though, I like the way they said, third season, Olivia Colman, you're okay, you're going to get the same money, yeah. Which would be an absolute disgrace if she didn't, because she's been Emmy nominated, she's won BAFTAs, she's a fully established, prestige actress. So if she wasn't getting the same money as Matt Smith, who frankly has all the charisma of a foot, I think that would be ridiculous.
I thought Matt Smith was brilliant as Prince Philip.
Oh yeah, because they're literally the same, they're, you know, absolute charisma voids. But I think, you know, as an actress, I think carrying a show, it is pretty much disgraceful.
Let's actually hear a clip. I think we've played this late last year, but I think we'll play it again, because this is from the early in second series. He's sent off on a tour of duty where I think he was supposed to behave himself but behave badly, and this is where Elizabeth confronts him about the state of their marriage and rumours of infidelity.
I've learned more about humiliation in the past few weeks than I hoped I would in a lifetime. I've never felt more alone than I have in the past 5 months.
And why do you think that was?
Because of your behavior.
Because you sent me away.
Yes, and why do you think that was?
I don't know. You tell me.
Because you're lost. You're lost in your role, and you're lost in yourself.
Christ.
Look. I realize that this marriage has turned out to be something quite different to what we both imagined.
Understatement.
And that we both find ourselves in a
prison.
In a situation that is unique. Our marriage is different to any other in the country because the exit route, which is open to everyone else.
A divorce?
Yes, a divorce. It's not an option for us. Ever.
Tension was cracking in that. They were, I think, in Portugal in that scene. There's another one later on in the series where they're in a Scottish hunting lodge, which is just absolutely, boom, it's brilliant stuff.
They had great chemistry off camera as well. They got on really well. So, you know, when they play those scenes together, they are on par. But even though for Claire Foy, look at where her career has gone now. Even off the back of that, she's now playing Lisbeth Salander, which is going to be another massive role for her. It was 100 million, I think.
But if you're doing the same job as somebody, you should get paid same amount of money.
But I can understand from an agent's perspective, though.
The show itself.
And she had been in Wolf Hall as well.
Exactly.
She was brilliant in that as well. So she had a track record. It wasn't like she was an unknown. But what's this about Reed Hastings, the head of Netflix, now saying he won't have inclusion riders? What's that?
Yeah, so Frances McDormand, in her Oscar speech, that she left everyone with two words, inclusion rider. And it was basically just to say that if you are someone with a high profile and you're employed and, you know, you're bankable, like, say, a Matt Smith type character, let's say, you should make it something within your contract to say that you want, you know, more women on set, more diversity, more people of colour, And you can actually ask for that. It's something that you can ask for right before you sign a contract. So, I mean, you'd think because Netflix, the only really Oscar bid and hope they had was Mudbound, and it was a female, young female director, and was the first female cinematographer to be ever nominated for an Oscar. You'd think that Reed Hastings would be someone that would support this because it's only something that can, Netflix can profit from, and they can, you know, toot their own horn about how they were first and groundbreaking to do this. But Reed Hastings is not into it. He says, you know, we just like to do things creatively. And what creatively in inverted commas means is we don't really know.
Suppose, but yeah, like you would think they would follow suit. Maybe they just don't want to give stars any more power. Like I know Michael B. Jordan at the moment, who you can see in Black Panther, like he has said going forward that he will not do business with any studio unless this inclusion rider is in place.
And I think, you know, it's not just about starring roles or acting. It's about people behind the camera, people behind the scenes. It's about also extras that populate like any drama series. Why can't a doctor be, you know, from Chinese descent? Why can't the best friend, you know, be Asian or black? Like, why does it always have to be, a lot of white faces populating shows and all these different roles? So I think it's something to look at. And Netflix do wield a lot of power and influence, and they do have, you know, endless blank checks. So I don't know why this is something that he would stop.
Okay, Gordon, how many programs did Dr. Stephen Hawking appear in?
Wow, he's been in a bit like, and ads as well. Let's not forget. I think he appeared in a Go Compare insurance ad too. But from The Simpsons, he was obviously appeared in that, I think about three times. Matt Groening also had him in Futurama as well. But then people, of course, will, The Big Bang Theory, he appeared in that too, where I think he was marking Sheldon's paper.
Yeah, that's it. This is where Stephen Hawking made an appearance on The Big Bang Theory, where Sheldon got to meet his hero.
Professor Hawking, it's an honor and a privilege to meet you, sir.
I know.
I want to thank you for taking time to see me.
My pleasure. I enjoyed reading your paper very much. You clearly have a brilliant mind.
I know.
Your thesis that the Higgs boson is a black hole, accelerating backwards through time, is fascinating.
Well, thank you. It came to me one morning in the shower.
That's nice. Too bad it's wrong.
What do you mean wrong?
You made an arithmetic mistake on page 2. It was quite a boner.
No, but that can't be right. I don't make arithmetic mistakes.
Are you saying I do?
Oh, no, of course not. It's just, I was thinking, oh, gosh, golly, I made a boo-boo. And I gave it to Stephen Hawking.
I think, you know, the best thing about all of this in that way is when you see the amount of TV shows he has been on, and he just really embraced pop culture and he loved being a celebrity. And I think for someone who could have been, you know, cloistered and sequestered within academia, I just like that he embraced that. There's Peter Stringfellow came out today and was showing pictures of him in Stringfellows and having a great time. And then he had Cher did a tweet.
Hang on a second. I didn't see that.
Hang on. Did. Are we suddenly endorsing Stringfellows?
I'm endorsing people enjoying themselves. Not with Peter Stringfellow, maybe. But Cher came out and had this mad tweet this morning about how she had lunch with him and talked about, you know, literally trying to turn back time, which was, I just loved the variety of people that came out just to, you know, said that you just wanted to be around celebrities and have the crack with him like we'd all want to be if we got to a certain level. But he did it with this kind of panache, and you know, he was laughing at himself as well as, you know, everybody else kind of pandering to him and fawning about him, which I thought he just had a really good attitude towards being a celebrity, whereas I think a lot of people can be quite snobbish about it these days, but he seemed to just embrace it.
Jim Bowen has died, the host of Bullseye. He was 80, but it seems to be something that people still love many years on.
I love Bullseye. Loads of time for Bullseye. I think there's nothing like it anymore on TV because it was so unjazzy, uncool, really unflash. It was like those terrible jumpers in the late 70s, early 80s that everybody would wear. It's like a whole world populated by men in pubs with beards that are unironic that would make you drink pints and pints of anything, pints of vodka, pints of cocktail sausages. They would be the only cocktail available on Bullseye would be a cocktail sausage. And that's what I loved about it. And I love the way there is somebody saying that the show repeats on Challenge TV now of it.
I've seen and some recently, yes.
There's this great kinship and a real kindness about Jim Bowen that's unlike, let's say, he wasn't exactly presentable or polished like his BBC, you know, other side of things. It would be, the comparison is completely different. He had this Northern Men's Club delivery and he kind of mumbled his announcement.
But he was never cruel to people,
but that's
Gordon,
it.
Was he?
No, he was like he got his a really shot of fame off the back of a TV show called The Comedians, which was a real springboard for an awful lot during the 60s. He was like a former deputy headmaster as well in a primary school, and then at the weekends he used to do his whole stand-up. And then, like that, he just managed to work his way into Granada TV through the likes of The Comedians. But you're absolutely right, Jennifer. There was a real warmth with him. And at its height, Bullseye had like 17.5 million. But some of the prizes, Matt, were horrendous. Like speedboats. You used to give them constantly away. And you could see the person's face going, this is what you've won, a speedboat. The last thing I need there was a speedboat.
Someone made a point on Twitter about how when he would be talking to people, because this is during, you know, Thatcher's stranglehold on Britain and, you know, mass unemployment. And when someone would say they're unemployed, it wasn't like a big deal. He didn't make anything out of it. He didn't, you know, make fun of them either, which I think this cruelty has crept into TV nowadays, where there's an almost demonization of the working classes, and something like Bullseye reminds you that, you know, it wasn't always like that and it didn't have to be like that.
Okay, also from the past, Dave Allen was Ireland's most popular comedian for many years in England. He was a mainstay in BBC television. He was effectively banned from RTE because of a sketch in which a whole lot of bishops and the Pope did a striptease on the steps of the Vatican. Let's hear a little bit of him when he talks about quitting smoking.
One of the good things, or one of the new things about giving up smoking, is that I now have my sense of smell back. I can actually get up in the morning and open a window, throw it up and breathe it, and smell again. Petrol. Carbon monoxide. Dog shit. I mean, it's a taste. I actually thought when I used to eat food, it was the smoking. I had no taste. It's not the smoking, it's the food. It's bloody tasteless. Somebody said to me the other day, shall we eat or have a McDonald's? And now the whole thing about being a smoker, actually being a smoker is very difficult in today's society because the pressures are on smokers. Society frowns upon smokers. There are signs everywhere. You notice in public, if you actually spit, if you spit in the street, you can be fined £25. If your dog fouls the footpath, £20. But the cost of a smoke, or what it would cost you if you're caught smoking, can be £50. Now that means that you can actually have a good spit. And crap to his heart's content, and you've still got a fiver to take home.
Tell us about this biopic, Dave Allen at Peace, Gordon, which is on RTE next month.
That's right, yeah. Aidan Gillen plays the late, great Dave Allen, and Tommy Tiernan plays his father. So, Dave Allen at Peace. So it's going to look at the relationship he had with his father and how that was instrumental then in cultivating his comedy and also his relationship with his brother and the loss of his finger as well. That is going to come into play as well in the film. But yeah, it'll be really intriguing to see how Aidan Gillen is going to just carry off Dave Allen, because that is a real tough task. But I'll be really...
You sound doubtful.
Yeah, I don't know.
Jennifer, I know, talking to you off air, you're not looking forward to this.
No.
Why not?
I think Dave Allen would find it really amusing that someone that played Charlie Haughey is going to play him as well. And I just, like, with the Charlie Haughey thing, I think Aidan Gillen is a wig actor.
What do you mean by that?
Within his wig, and I just feel that is this going to be another wig role? Or, and I find that he just plays the same thing, no matter if he's in The Wire or in Game of Thrones or even in Queer as Folk, he just gives the same delivery constantly. And I just wonder, I don't know if we're doing Dave Allen a great service if he's our number one choice for this.
And I suppose you could say love-hate as well only really kicked on when he wasn't the main figure.
Yeah, when they moved the focus to Nidge completely. Like, and I think, you know, I think Irish audiences really, we needed Dave Allen and we need to have somebody play him who's almost that, got that firebrand attitude or that cheeky attitude, that like healthy mistrust of politicians, that kind of, you know, the anti-authoritarian streak inside him. And I just, I don't know, I guess the laconic delivery, I can see that in a way, but I just don't know if he has that charisma.
Would Dylan Moran been better? When you think that Tommy Tiernan, his old classmate, plays the father. Like someone like Dylan Moran, who's obviously one of our best stand-up comedians, to play one of the great Irish stand-up comedians. Would that have been a better choice?
They should have had you involved in the casting. What do you make of Jeremy Clarkson as the new host of Who Wants to Be a Millionaire?
I know your sign, Jennifer. I actually do think on your face...
He wants to be Brexit.
See, Chris Tarrant is really off the scene now, and I suppose what they're trying to do is revitalise this programme, so they're bringing it back for a week of specials. I think he might be all right.
Are ITV trying to collate the most hateful men in the UK for all their presenting gigs? Because they've got haggis-faced Piers Morgan, redundant gas bag Eamon Holmes, scour and brush faced Jeremy Kyle. I mean, and now they want Clarkson to do this? It's just, it's Brexit TV at its finest. Is there nobody else hanging around ITV apart from Anton Deck to do this? And like, what else is this going to lead to? Like Rod Little doing The Chase or Toby Young doing The Cube? This is not what we want. It's like, there's nobody, like any kind of female or anybody younger
to take over this. From a ratings perspective, people will be intrigued to see him back on terrestrial television to a degree. You know what I mean? Like, obviously,
given that he's on Amazon.
Exactly.
Now, yeah.
So I think there's going to be that real intriguing factor. It's stunt casting, like in the end of the day. That's what producers are going for. And I think he can play that character that Chris Tarrant did, you know, just being quite aloof with the guests. And I think that's the delivery that they want. And I think he can do it.
Are you in favour of the Sopranos prequel?
Oh, I don't know. It is a tough one. Like I know a few years ago there was talk they were going to do a Goodfellas, a prequel TV series, and then someone saw sense and then that was cast aside. But yeah, David Chase, over the years there's been an awful lot of talk of The Sopranos continuing in some form. He's decided that, yeah, it is going to be a prequel series and that it could focus on Tony Soprano's father.
Yes, very quickly. Pick of the week, Jennifer.
Obviously, it's the Drag Race. I know you've been kept up with this. It's the Drag Race All-Stars Series 3 finale on Comedy Central at Saturday at 10. If you aren't watching it in other means, you've got to... this is it. It's not as genius, as ingenious as Season 2, but Season 3 has had, you know, stuff like Shangela's Revenge and Ben de la Creme turning herself into Ben de la Christ. So we don't really know what's going to happen. It's anyone's game, and that's what the most exciting thing about it is. And it's, you know, we don't have to wait that long for Season 10. It's starting on March 22nd. Okay. So start your engines.
I'll be watching the rugby on Saturday. Your pick, Gordon.
I'm going to go with Hardy Books. The guys are back on March 22nd on Thursday at 10:35 on RT2, which was brilliant as a YouTube series. The first series they did on RT, you could definitely feel they were a bit neutered into the comedy delivery. So fingers crossed, the second series, they're back to their best.
Gordon Hayden, Jennifer Gannon, thank you very much for joining us here on The Last Word this evening.
The Last Word with Matt Cooper on Today FM.